Perhaps you remember it vividly. Perhaps you weren't even born yet.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
This hour, remembering Richard Nixon's resignation 40 years ago. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, a look back at the scandal that culminated in the dramatic resignation of President Nixon. My guests, former Des Moines Register columnist David Yepsen and Jim Hutter, who taught a college class at Iowa State University about Nixon's downfall. What do you remember most about the scandal? What are the lessons of Watergate? How did it change us? Conversation. First, this news. If you think politics is broken, there's a key event that probably helped lead you down that path. The Watergate scandal. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. 40 years ago, Richard Nixon officially resigned from the office of the presidency, the only U.S. commander-in-chief ever to do so. After his administration's connection to the Watergate scandal and subsequent cover-up, the disgraced president stepped down, passing the torch to his vice president, Gerald Ford. Here are some voices from 40 years ago you may remember.
From CBS News headquarters in Washington, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
Since Monday, when President Nixon released the new tape, the smoking pistol of the Watergate evidence that tied it directly to him, events have been rushing toward one seemingly inevitable conclusion. Removal from office. Now, if all reports are correct, and there's no reason to doubt them, Mr. Nixon has chosen to take that final step himself. More from Dan Rather.
The tentative plan is for the president to announce tonight that he is submitting his resignation to Secretary Kissinger, effective late tomorrow morning, with the expectation that Vice President Ford would be sworn in as president around midday tomorrow. Under this plan, he would leave Washington as president of the United States. He would arrive in California as a former president. Dan Rather, CBS News, the White House.
I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
Richard Nixon resigning in August of 1974. This hour, we want to remind ourselves of what happened during the Watergate scandal that led to President Nixon's resignation and reflect how it changed our politics, our news media, how it changed us as a nation, how it changed us as individuals. And joining us to do that, James Hutter. He's a former professor of political science at Iowa State University. He taught a class while at Iowa State called Nixon, Watergate, and Groupthink. He joins us in our AIM studio. Jim, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
David Yepsen is with us. That's a name very familiar to Iowans. He is now director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. But for many years, he was a Des Moines Register political columnist. And before that, a reporter here in Iowa, David Yepsen. Welcome to our program. David Yepsen, are you there?
Yes, this is David Yepsen.
Okay, we hear you now. Thank you.
Good to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. We want to have our listeners join us as well, because we want to ask you, River to River listeners, what you remember most about the scandal. If it's in your living memory, we have to remind ourselves that in the meantime, more than half of our population, more than half the U.S. population, was not alive during Watergate. What are the lessons of Watergate? How did it change us as a people, as a nation? What is the key memory you have of Watergate? 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, Iowa Public Radio, is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let me start with you, Jim Hutter. Give us a nutshell summary of what happened. How did this unfold, culminating in the resignation?
Well, there are, of course, a great many factors that go into it, and we can't deal with all of them. I think the first thing that we probably ought to do is set the stage a little bit. Richard Nixon had won a tremendous number of elections from his head of virtually every organization in high school he ever participated in. He'd get elected to that. He was elected to Congress right after World War II in 46, and then he was elected to the Senate in 48, and then vice president in 50. This is a meteoric career. However, he was never one of the most popular people to run for office. There were Nixon haters. They were, in general, called Democrats, but at any rate, he was not all that popular. But he just kept being elected. And then came 1960, and he lost to Kennedy in an election that was literally stolen from him by votes in Illinois and Texas that were added to the Democratic totals, which was something that happened all the time. But this changed Nixon a great deal, I believe. And we think of him as being paranoid. Well, as they say, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they aren't out to get you. And he really felt that the Kennedy family and Ted Kennedy, the next likely candidate to run, was really on the path to get him. So when he set up the plumbers unit in the White House, their first duty was to not look into leaks that had to do with Vietnam War or anything, but to find out about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick, which I think tells us a lot. It tells us about his mental situation. I think it changed a great deal when, in fact, he had, in his mind at least, the presidency stolen from him. What would have ever happened had he actually taken office in 61? I don't know. But that leads us to his attitude when in 72 he's winning a tremendous landslide election. And
he took every state except one over McGovern, didn't he, or something like that?
Something like that. It was, and D.C. D.C., you know, votes for the Democrat overwhelmingly every time. But it was just, you know, terrific. But instead of celebrating that very night, he's talking to Bob Haldeman and the White House and saying, we're going to go out and get those SOBs that have tried to do us in for the last 4 years. Now that we basically aren't going to run for re-election again, we're going to just really take it to our enemies. And that's this attitude. And that, I think, is what was behind Watergate. Mm-hmm. And the break-in.
So what was the first news we heard out of here that Woodward and Bernstein latched onto that began the whole snowball of news that took place over many months?
Many months. And I would recommend to anyone that hadn't seen it, the picture, the news, the movie that was made, All the President's Men. But the point was that these two more or less cub reporters, not that they were brand new, Woodward was sent to the court to find out about the people who broke into the DNC. It was a local story, and that was the first time. But what he found was that one of the criminals, one of the people who were caught, McCord, had direct ties to the committee to reelect the president. Well, by the way, Committee to Reelect the President doesn't even have the name of the presidential candidate in its name. That's pretty unusual. That shows you the degree to which Nixon's campaign, and Nixon was not all that popular, although he was about to win a landslide. Mm-hmm. But that's where it starts. And what most people don't remember, it wasn't really publicized, but this was the second break-in, about a week before, something like that, 2 weeks maybe. These same people had broken into the Watergate and had left bugs, electronic listening devices, and tried to take pictures and stuff to get information on the Democratic presidential campaign. And then they went back in because one of the bugs wasn't working and they didn't get enough pictures. And that's when they were caught. They were broke in on a Friday night, but they were caught Saturday morning after midnight. So it's always called June the 17th, and That's why it doesn't make the newspapers until Sunday morning, and that's when Nixon reads about it. He's in Florida on his way back to D.C., and he basically says, what the heck was this all about?
Mm-hmm. Because Nixon did not, as it turned out, give that direct order, I want you to break into the DNC.
That's my opinion. At the time, there were many, many people who thought, no, he did. And it was generally thought that he did by a lot of people, including John Dean, who thought that anything that Bob Haldeman knew, Nixon knew. But my opinion and what I have read is that he ordered intelligence to be gathered on the Democratic campaign because he was paranoid that he was going to lose again. And this was translated down the line eventually by Jeb Stuart Magruder to tell G. Gordon Liddy, it's the office of the chair of the DNC that you're going to find the stuff we really want, their secret plans. And that's how it got to be Democratic National Headquarters. And Nixon himself said, who in the heck thinks there's anything terribly important in the DNC headquarters? That is stupid.
Jim Hutter is with us, former Iowa State University professor of political science. He taught a class, Nixon, Watergate, and Groupthink. We're remembering the resignation of Richard Nixon 40 years ago. David Yepsen also with us. David Yepsen, you were, as I understand at this time, in 1974, 73, 74, you had been a reporter at the Quad City Times. You'd made the transition to the Des Moines Register as a reporter. Is that right?
Yeah, I was just a cub police reporter for the old Des Moines Tribune in those days. So I was really just starting my career.
Mm-hmm. So we hadn't found your... What you become known for is your politics. So when did Watergate enter your awareness?
Well, as it was happening, this story, it mushroomed. It started out, a lot of people weren't paying attention to it. And I think as it grew during the mid-70s, it just started to crowd out everything else. It was the subject that people were talking about. It just confirmed everything that the Nixon haters felt as about him, and I think Jim is right. There were certainly a lot of people then who had a dislike of Nixon. That's why he ran in 1968 as the new Nixon, and it just started to crowd out everything else in news, and it started to affect everything else in the news. News wasn't as It didn't move as quickly then as it does now, but candidates were being asked about it, what they thought about it, and what should be done about it.
Mm-hmm. And David Yepsen, remind us, because we have to keep thinking that more than half the U.S. population and many people listening were not, it's not in their living memory. They were not born yet. We had, prior to Watergate, a different view of politics in this country. Can you describe what that pre-Watergate sense of government institutions and politics was like, and how it's different than today?
Well, I think perhaps the best place it changed was with the news organizations. I mean, media people were much more deferential to the president, the combination of Watergate and the Lyndon Johnson's presidency before it was that people became just a lot more cynical. So I think Americans were very trustful of the president, and then we start finding out that Lyndon Johnson led us down a path we didn't think we were going to go down, and then along comes Nixon, and so that Americans became much more cynical, and certainly media people became much more cynical and skeptical about anything the president did, and this rubbed off on all other political leaders as well, and you had a generation of reporters, people my age, who went into journalism, saw that movie that Jim referenced and said, boy, I want to do this with my life. And all of a sudden, every town clerk in the country was having somebody, a reporter for the local weekly, looking over their shoulder asking questions. And it really did change the nature of journalism, I think.
Okay, we want to reach out to our listeners, 1-866-780-9100. If it's in your living memory, what do you remember most about the scandal? What is the imprint that you are left with after that resignation and living through the Watergate scandal? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Find us on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Let me go back to you, Jim Hutter. We talked about Nixon perhaps having a direct order to break into the DNC, the Watergate, where it was housed there. Perhaps not. But we do know about his obstruction of the investigations. What did he try to do to keep this from coming out?
Well, let me first reiterate what David just said. The great lesson of Watergate is sometimes said, oh, if you have a problem, get it out, get it in the media, don't cover it up. But the real lesson is just what David said. Media changed to attack dog journalism, gotcha journalism, to being very much in the mode of Woodward and Bernstein. And so that is to me probably the most significant aspect of it. And, of course, how politicians were treated as a result because of public opinion.
And it was because Woodward and Bernstein were met with a stonewalling from the administration and obstruction, right, that caused this shift in journalism?
It was very interesting. I mean, of course, they got very little cooperation. The movie story and the book is hard to follow if you weren't there then and reading the book almost contemporaneously. It's kind of hard to follow, but the movie straightens out the storyline really well. But yes, the situation was that they were pounding the beat, pounding the streets, knocking on doors, getting next to no help from anyone, and piecing together things bit by bit by bit. And as David said, it strung out for months. And at first, the public's reaction was, oh, this is so boring. A great portion of the public knew nothing about it, cared nothing about it, read nothing about it. These were two guys in the local Washington newspaper, essentially. But it grew, and then the other papers, the Times and the media, the television, you know, they sort of catch in that, oh, this is still going on. And it grew and grew. And then we had the Senate hearings with Sam Ervin, and every day it was there, every night. They had the hearings live in the day, and then they replayed them at night on public broadcast. And it absolutely is the beginning of the creation of a public opinion that eventually leads to, we're tired of this and we're tired of him. Let's get rid of this guy. He is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Let's
and
go.
So that's kind of why he left, the Congress follows the public. They really do.
Jim Hutter, former Iowa State University professor of political science, taught a class, Nixon, Watergate, and Groupthink, along with David Yepsen. And let's go to Dave in Des Moines. He dialed 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, asking you how you remember Watergate. Dave in Des Moines, yes, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Sure. Yeah, I remember sitting transfixed in the basement of my house on a small TV when I was a kid watching that. And I think the most despicable act in retrospect and the thing that's hurt my opinion of government because of this is finding out that Nixon used the war effort to gin up his ratings to get that second term. And so now, I mean, there's a lot of brave young men that died because of Nixon's vanity. So now when I hear any politician start beating a war drum, I go back to that and I say, is there really a threat, or is this just someone trying to take our eyes off the ball?
Great observation.
Thanks.
Dave.
Thanks,
Dave in Des Moines. David Yepsen. So that is the seed right there of our cynicism about government and politicians.
I think a lot of it has to do with that. I certainly think Vietnam and Lyndon Johnson's presidency started that. And then along comes Nixon. Nixon, in 1968, gets elected in large part because Hubert Humphrey was unable to stitch back together the Democratic coalition. And a lot of the anti-war activists just sat it out and voted for Gene McCarthy and were disillusioned by Robert Kennedy's assassination. And while Humphrey was closing it up at the end, Nixon won, and in large part because of what Dave described, people were just sick of of the old of Johnson. Well, I mean, the liberals who sat out the 1968 election, I think they came to realize the error of their ways because they got Richard Nixon as president. And by 1972 and 73 and 74, this story that we're talking about here, the Watergate story, really has started to corrode our politics. And I mean, it had a lot of effects in 1974 in the election. I know you want to talk about that, but I don't think Americans. I think Americans and American journalists got cynical because of that and have not changed since.
Mm-hmm. We do want to talk about the aftermath of Watergate and the ripples, the repercussions that followed Watergate in politics. But first, one of the key terms, Jim Hutter, we hear about in connection with Watergate that some people may need some explaining about is this term deep throat, a source that Woodward and Bernstein had. And we didn't know who deep throat was until very recently.
Yes, and I think we're going to let David talk about this probably more than I am, but deep throat was W. Mark Felt, who was the second highest person in the FBI under, what's his name, David? I've gone blank.
From the FBI? Patrick Gray?
No, the head of the FBI for years. Hoover.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah, I was trying to think of Patrick Hoover. I don't know what the heck. But anyway. But Mark Felt had a personal relationship with Woodward from some years back and was willing to talk to him. And one of the interesting oddities is that in the movie, he says over and over again, follow the money. Follow the money. That's the key here. What to do was where the campaign money came from. It turns out when the book got computerized and they did a search for follow the money, it never was in the book. And Woodward and Bernstein said, basically, you got to be kidding. It's not in the book. Well, that is what he kept telling us.
Other comments on Deep Throat, David Yepsen?
Well, that's an example of how it changed journalism. That phrase, follow the money, became really an article of faith with a lot of reporters, even today. You know, we are looking at campaign finance reports. You're looking at real estate records. The way we cover politics was changed simply because of that advice. You track the money, and you know what's happening and why.
Mm-hmm. Let's go quickly to Doug in Urbandale. Doug, we have a break in just about a minute. What's your comment or question?
Sure. I was only 12 years old when this all happened, and I grew up without television, so I didn't get a lot of it. But in college, we studied it in abnormal psychology, and I kind of think the whole crux of it was that it came down to G. Gordon Liddy was the one who led them all down this path, and it was the psychology of it all was that a lot of them felt he was crazy, but they didn't know how to deal with him. They kind of just let him go, and it just kept getting further and further. I don't know, is there any real basis to that? Is that kind of the feeling amongst journalists?
Okay, groupthink is part of the title of your class, Jim Hutter. Any connection there?
Well, that indeed is one of the ways in which people think and in groups. And what the caller said is really important. They basically, Gordon Liddy put forward three plans, each one smaller. And finally, John Mitchell, the attorney general and head of the campaign, said, oh, let's just let him do it.
We have to take a short break.
I don't think they knew what he was going to do, really.
Jim Hutter is with us, former Iowa State University professor of political science, taught a class, Nixon, Watergate, and groupthink. David Yepsen is with us, currently director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University, former Des Moines Register political columnist. Join our conversation. What do you remember most about the Watergate scandal? The resignation as we remember it 40 years ago, 1-866-780-9100. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're remembering the resignation of Richard Nixon 40 years ago in August of 1974 and talking about the legacies of the Watergate scandal with David Yepsen. He's currently director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. Of course, a longtime Des Moines Register political columnist before that. And before that, during the scandal in the early 70s, an Iowa reporter with the Quad City Times and then with the Des Moines Register, a self-described Cub reporter David Yepsen. Jim Hutter is with us, former Iowa State University professor of political science. He taught a class, Nixon, Watergate, and Groupthink. We want you to join our conversation as we remember this scandal and how it changed us as a nation, how it changed our politics, our media, across the board. It changed so many things. What are your personal reflections? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook. Let's go right to the phones. Diane in Iowa City, thank you for waiting. What is your memory?
Well, I know everyone's sort of given all these sort of negative comments. I actually take away from Watergate heroic moments, and I think about the people who weren't necessarily lifted up. First of all, it was an African-American night watchman who died without necessarily being particularly recognized, who happened to notice that there was a piece of tape over the lock and that it didn't quite fit, or else maybe none of this would have even come to pass.
In the Watergate complex.
Right. And so that allowed all of the rest of this to unfold. Secondly, I also take the heroic moments and the amazing lesson in the values of democracy and the depth of it in our country from Barbara Jordan and Sam Irwin in particular. I was a sophomore in college, and I happened that summer to be working as an intern at the Environmental Protection Agency, which was very new, in Ruckelshaus' office. And people may forget, but Ruckelshaus went on to be the assistant attorney general. And so this is my second heroic moment, when the president pushed on Elliot Richardson, the attorney general, to violate his oath and to do the wrong thing. He refused, and we had the Saturday Night Massacre, and to his credit, Ruckelshaus did as well. So for me, I take away that our democracy was strong, it survived, and as we've seen subsequently in the last 40 years in a number of other countries, those habits and customs and learnings of democracy have been fragile and weak, and they have folded. And while we may have faltered a bit, ultimately at the end of it, we survived, prevailed, and we went forward. So I take heroic lessons away from Watergate.
Diane in Iowa City, thank you so much. Jim Hutter has been taught a class on this. Do you see other heroic efforts, heroic people in this saga?
Well, I believe that the caller is absolutely right. In a certain sense, you could say most of the people involved in Watergate were not Nixon and the ones who were perpetrating the cover-up in the crime, and deserve the credit that she's referring to. I believe the guard was named Frank Willis, wasn't it? And he found tape on the door and said, that's wrong, and took it off. This is the door from the parking level, I believe, up into the Watergate office complex building. And then he came back a second time, and the door was there again. Now, some people
The tape was there again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you might wonder, why would these burglars put tape there in such a way that he could find it? And the answer is that if you're a workman and you're delivering stuff up in these buildings while you tape the door, and you do it in an obvious way to say, look, I know that I'm taping this door. Don't get so upset about it. Whereas if they taped it so it looked like it was still locked, then he would have been more alert. But he called in this problem, and that's when the policeman came after midnight and found the burglars in the office of the DNC.
Mm-hmm. Diane in Iowa City, thank you for bringing that forward. David Yepsen, I want to ask you a little bit more about the aftermath here, specific to Iowa, because we can tie the politics, the aftermath of Watergate, Nixon's resignation, to our present politics, can't we?
Oh, certainly. I think my own personal view, I think, and it ties into your question, one of the heroes of Watergate was Gerald Ford. President Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. It's probably the biggest thing that cost him re-election with Jimmy Carter. People were angry at the time. But as we look back over it, it clearly enabled the country to move on. And it was a very courageous act by President Ford because it did contribute to, he knew it was going to be unpopular and ultimately was in that election. Effects in Iowa. It gave us Jimmy Carter. Americans in 1974 and 75 were fed up with politics. And there was this unknown Georgia governor who started showing up in Iowa, saying things like, "I won't lie to you, and trust me." And he was refreshing, and he was new. And Iowa Democrats, a plurality of them anyway, who voted for a presidential candidate in 1976, voted for Jimmy Carter. That sent Jimmy Carter, started to send him clear to the White House. But secondly, it also established, helped establish the Iowa caucuses as an important early test of presidential candidate strength. And that's something that affects our politics today. I think another fact, another effect of Watergate in 1974 was Tom Harkin's election to Congress. Senator Harkin was elected to Congress in 74. Berkeley Bedell was elected in 74. They'd both run in 1972 and lost, but came back in 74. In Berkeley Bedell's case, Wiley Mayne was the incumbent Republican. He on the Judiciary Committee, he voted against impeachment, and it helped Berkeley Bedell defeat him. And Tom Harkin defeated Bill Shirley in 1974 and started his political career. So I think that's a second effect that we've seen. And it really trickled on down through. In the 1974 elections, the Democrats took back the legislature. They took control of the legislature, both the House and the Senate. I think you also saw up and down the ticket, you saw elections where Democrats were able to win. It was a very good year for Democrats, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Russell is with us from Elkader. Russell, were you alive during the Watergate scandal? If so, what do you remember?
Yeah, I was alive. I remember it very clearly. I was in the military at the time. I was not a Nixon lover by any means. I don't know if I was a Nixon hater. I didn't think much of him. I knew about his elections early on in California against Jerry Voorhees and Helen Gohegan, and there were a lot of dirty tricks that his campaigns employed. And when I was in the service, when Nixon took office, I remember him saying that he was not going to extend the Vietnam War into Cambodia. And at the same time, I received a letter from a friend of mine who was in the Army in Vietnam saying, "Don't tell my wife, but I'm being sent into Cambodia." So I recall that. In any event, as the whole Watergate thing played out, I watched it very intently, and I thought it was just great drama. There were terrific characters involved, and particularly in the Senate hearings, Sam Ervin and the witnesses, John Dean and his gorgeous wife, Mo, and then there was Martha Mitchell, and it was just great drama, and there was a lot of suspense. I kept wondering, how is this going to play out? Are they going to get him? What's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
So those are my recollections of it, and I thank you for the program and your guests, too.
Russell, thank you for calling from Elkader, 1-866-780-9100. So we talked in the beginning, Jim Hutter, about it not being very much in the press to begin with. Can you point to a turning point or two where it did capture the attention and it did turn into the drama that was just described?
Well, I believe Russell's hit the nail on the head. It was the Senate Watergate hearings, and that points to the role of television. We go back a little bit further, and we have Senator Estes Gafafer using Senate crime hearings, and I forget what year that was, in the 60s, and he becomes a vice presidential candidate because of television. But the Senate Watergate hearings with this wonderful character from North Carolina, Senator Sam Ervin, and all of these other characters, Russell was absolutely right on. There were so many characters that we could identify with and get angry with or like, and that absolutely did marvelous things for the public in getting their attention. And then, of course, that's about when, as David said, it just started growing and mushrooming until finally Nixon kept saying, "Oh, I'm innocent, I haven't done anything wrong." And people are saying, "You're lying, you're lying." And pretty soon, it's their anger with Nixon is what boils mm-hmm. and leads to his actual resignation.
And these Watergate tapes. I think I remember watching a Johnny Carson during this time. And Johnny's joke that night was to, you know, people were wondering where some of the missing tapes were. And all of a sudden, these tapes, reel-to-reel tapes, dropped from the ceiling on Johnny Carson's set. So that was a joke.
I wish I remembered that.
Let's talk a little bit about the generational view. David Yepsen, I want to point this at you. I'm sure you've read about it. Over 40% of the country, including more than half of the people under the age of 35, think the Watergate scandal was just a symptom of political wrangling and mudslinging, what we call now politics as usual. This is a CNN ORC International Release poll last Friday, evaluating Americans' attitudes toward the scandal that led to Nixon's resignation. Incredibly, only a slim majority think it was a serious matter. And there's a big generational divide here over the significance of the scandal. A majority of those older than 40 describe Watergate as a very serious problem, and those under 40 say it was just politics. Explain that.
Well, I think for those of us in the over 40 cohort, we saw what I was describing, but it was seismic. It changed our attitudes toward the presidency and the president. And in combination with Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon's presidency, we said Americans discovered, my God, our president lied to us. And that was a real huge awakening. And then you started hearing some of the crude things that were said on tape. And it was just one thing after another. Today, people see that as just a part of a continuum, that politics is and always has been dishonest. And every other day, it seems like you get a confirmation of that. Particularly here in Illinois. It doesn't surprise me that younger Americans who didn't go through that see it as just part of a narrative as opposed to something that really started a narrative.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that started happening in the 1970s, and I want to ask you both if you think this is a coincidence or ties in with some of the things you were describing, David Yepsen, the start of the decline of moderates in both major parties traces back to the 70s, about this time. David Yepsen, is there a connection?
I think some. I think you had activists in both parties who came to the fore and started to become more visible. You had a Watergate generation in Congress that was certainly much more militant and were fighters and were angry. I think of Senator Harkin. He later mellows and becomes part of that same establishment. But yeah, it gave birth to a whole new generation of political leaders, a lot of whom were pretty adamant that they didn't want to do politics the same old way.
Mm-hmm. We have some changes too in the view of Richard Nixon when he resigned in the wake of the scandal in August of 1974. His approval ratings around 24%. Nixon said he was convinced that history would vindicate him. Here's a quote. This is from a college audience speech he gave in 1978. Some people say I didn't handle Watergate properly, and they're right. I screwed up, and I paid the price, but let's get on to my achievements. You'll be here in the year 2000, and we'll see how I am regarded then. Well, we flash forward to public opinion surveys later. Dozens of polls conducted since 1982. He averages 32nd among all presidents. He's not identified as the nation's worst president. How do you explain this change, Jim Hutter?
They weren't there. I think really it's a difference between the people who experienced it. You can read about things, and gosh knows we have students reading about things all the time. But you get the feel for it when you're there.
Right.
Nixon, one of the things you were talking about is the growth of the people who are in the middle. Nixon was the creator of the Southern Strategy. That is to say, we want to make Republicans win in the South. And that is part of a really great change in American politics, where the solid South was solidly Democratic, and now it is solidly Republican, and it has caused really transformation of American politics, and really a sort of a polarization. I used to say, I wish all the conservative Democrats would go to the Republican Party and all the liberal Republicans would join the Democrats. Oh, be careful what you wish for.
Your comment there, you weren't there, is so true. I, as a 10-year-old growing up in Cedar Falls and not politically active or interested in politics in any special way, at 10 years old, I was interested in the swimming pool and baseball and things like that. I remember asking my parents, are we going to be okay when the resignation came about? It felt, even to this 10-year-old, like we were on a precipice. David Yepsen.
Well, I think, first of all, my explanation of Nixon's polls, number one, he's still very close to the bottom. His numbers still are terrible. And secondly, that they may be a little better than they were when they left office, but that's true for most presidents. Harry Truman's job approval rating was something like 28%. Now he's considered one of our better presidents. So I think what Nixon was hoping for was that time would change some public attitudes towards him. But in this case, the good things that he did in his presidency, opening relations with China, Environmental Protection Agency, moderate things, were so eclipsed by that. A little bit like Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam. It's hard to look at all of what Johnson did in the War on Poverty and the Voting Rights and Civil Rights Acts and without having to cut through the fog of Vietnam. And you can't look at Nixon without having to cut through the fog of Watergate. And so I think it still colors people's view of Nixon today, and as I said, I think it permanently changed Americans' views of politics and politicians. We expect politicians to lie to us now.
Karen is with us from Des Moines. The hour is coming to an end. Karen, what do you want to chip in as we finish up this hour reflecting on the resignation of Richard Nixon?
Well, from Des Moines and Guttenberg, actually, it's the international idea of this, that the founding fathers created a system. A president resigns or dies or some way or another is removed from office, and the vice president steps in. And in this, after this trauma that I'm sure that was internationally felt, I'm sure there are an awful lot of governments watching to see what was going to happen in the United States. And the transition to the new president was remarkable. And it was Nixon gets on a helicopter, he leaves, and we have a new president, and the deal is done. Unlike today, the system that the founding fathers designed for us worked. And I don't think that topic should be discussed more fully, particularly in light of what's happening to our stature in the world right now, because I think this dysfunctional government that we have, unlike when Ford took over the presidency, has international repercussions.
Mm-hmm. Karen, we're running out of time. I want to go to Jim Hutter here, because this is an interesting point that you say the system worked, and indeed it did, and we were viewed, Jim Hutter, by the rest of the world as having something that saw us through a crisis, a system that worked and didn't collapse, and no shots were fired.
No shots were fired, no riots in the street, no people out protesting that we just lost our leader. It is truly a remarkable, absolutely remarkable event in American history for that reason. One of the people who was on the staff of Nixon and in Washington, it was interviewed, and he said he took his two little kids with him and put them in the car after about 10 o'clock at night, Thursday night, when Nixon resigned, and drove by the White House, and the lights were on, and there were no people around. He said, look, we just had a coup d'etat, peaceful revolution, and it's quiet in the streets. And he looked in the back seat. Yeah, it was quiet there, too. They were sound asleep.
David Yepsen, we have about a minute left. Your last reflections, perhaps tying it in to today, because there are so many gates out there, Trooper Gate, Monica Gate, Travel Gate, even a Camilla Gate from the United Kingdom. Tie it into today. What if it happened today?
Well, I think we'd be okay if it happened today. I don't think it will ever happen that way. There are too many safeguards and checks that have occurred. We'll have other scandals.
But the fact that an impeachment now is a political football, it wasn't then.
Right, and it was serious, and even that's been trivialized, and a lot of Republican leaders are backing away from that talk. I think Vietnam and Watergate, I put them together, changed Americans. I think it made us more cynical about politics and politicians. It made it harder for our political leaders to govern. And unfortunately, I think that it's going to take similar crises to create seismic change in America so that we can get back to a time where there's more collegiality so we work together. That happened after the Civil War. It happened during and after the Great Depression. But it takes these big events to sort of change the arc of American history. And so I'm not certainly not wishing that it happens again, but I actually don't think you'll see a Watergate-type scandal.
Right. You're keying off what Karen said. Can you imagine in 30 seconds for us what specifically would be a seismic event that we may have in front of us to get us out of this hyper-partisan do-nothing politics we have in Washington?
Oh, continued terrorist attacks, a nuclear accident. Those are the kinds of economic cataclysm. I mean, we haven't repealed the business cycle yet, and there's a lot of concern about that. You know, we're on the cusp of another Great Depression. You hear that talk from time to time. Those are the kind of events that could perhaps change the direction and the tone of American politics.
David Yepsen, we've run out of time. Jim Hutter, former Iowa State University professor of political science. David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University, formerly of the Des Moines Register. What a wonderful conversation. Thank you both, and thanks to our callers as well, as we remembered the resignation of Richard Nixon.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. In Ames, we had help from Garrett Van Leeuwen today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. If you'd like to listen to this program, go to the podcast. We'll have it up here shortly at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.